The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
President Trump also sending a direct message to NATO, warning allies could face a, quote, very bad future if they don't help reopen the Strait of Hormuz and deal with the Iran threat. Here is the exact quote from the president yesterday. It's only appropriate that people who are the beneficiaries of the Strait will help to make sure that nothing bad happens there. If there's no response or if it's a negative response, I think it will be very bad for the future of NATO.
The United States of America is a net energy exporter. You know, we have plenty to supply our own country. And so this is about other countries, including China, including our NATO allies, that receive oil and gas from the Gulf. And ultimately, that security of the Strait of Hormuz is in their interest. And so he is absolutely right to suggest that our allies need to come, need to help us and support our efforts in making sure that the Iranian regime no longer has ballistic missiles, Shahed drones, or developing a nuclear weapon. And all of these things add up to a fact that this should be the whole world, our allies, our friends, folks that benefit from the energy in the Gulf, coming together and, you know, sending a clear message that the Iranian regime can no longer get away with this.
These countries come in and protect their own territory because it is their territory. It's a place which they get their energy, and they should come and they should help us protect it. You could make the case that maybe we shouldn't even be there at all because we don't need it. We have a lot of oil.
But he did raise the specter of, as you said, there being a very bad future for NATO if other countries did not help. Now, among the countries that Trump is calling on include the UK, France, Japan and Australia. They're in a bit of a tricky situation. While privately their impulse would be to think, why should we help Trump get out of the mess that he has got himself into through an unforced error, they also know, as Trump himself knows, that they're quite dependent on flows of energy from the Persian Gulf.
US President calling for US's allies to send warships to help secure the Strait of Hormuz. The response, lukewarm at best, really.
Which is that we are not engaged in these actions of the US and Israel. We're not engaged in offensive actions, and we will not be engaged in those actions.
Into the third week of this war now, and you can see this is when the hard decisions are being made. Donald Trump, he said there on Air Force One, he was demanding that the rest of the world, well, nations in particular, you know, America's traditional enemies, by the way, but we'll leave that aside, maybe get to it a little bit later in the show. But hey, the rest of the world should be helping us. The rest of the world should be supporting this. And then you see the response from the rest of the world. And it's not exactly enthusiastic in support of the United States of America. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. We're off and running on another week of live broadcasting. You can get to the live stream of this show at our website, thetrumpet.com, or at the Rumble channel or the YouTube channel. Any of those three platforms will get you the live show and also the programs posted after the fact as well, if you prefer to watch on demand. So 3 weeks in, the war is progressing, as we wrote in the morning brief. Today, President Trump, he's looking for a way out. He's looking for help and assistance, whether it comes from NATO or China or whoever. You know, we're pretty much, we've got enough energy of our own. It's the rest of the world. And you heard there from one of the Euro sources, they don't want to help Trump. I mean, this is a perfect window into the world and what it thinks of America. Yes, everyone wants cheap oil, but everyone also wants to see America fail. That's the truth. And American representatives can go on and on and on about how the rest of the world, we've got all of our allies, and our allies need to step forward and show support and this and that and the other. And yet, like with so many of these developments, what we're seeing is Europeans or whoever using it as an excuse to really stick it to America. And America, of course, as we've said, from the start of this latest war, wars are easier to start than they are to finish. That's for sure. In the morning brief, Joel Hilliker says this, President Trump wants to declare victory and leave, but this would leave intact Iran's threat to the Strait of Hormuz and the energy crisis it has created. Thus, President Trump faces a dilemma: declare success or risk deeper entanglement to force an unacceptable deal. These are not easy options. Well, I guess declaring success might be a little easier. But declaring it and whether or not it's successful, I mean, that's a different thing, as we've seen so often with these huge declarations, these big statements. Do they match the reality on the ground? Unconditional surrender, for example. Well, if we have time, we'll get into more history. Again, some powerful lessons of history that should be teaching us today. It says the fundamental reality America faces is that the Iranian regime has sunk deep roots over the past five decades since its Islamic revolution. Replacing it with a less radical, less provocative government would take enormous resolve, resolve that, frankly, America does not have. And, I mean, that's the morning brief. Then you look at the American Spectator, again, making some of the same points. We're 3 weeks in, and the definition of victory is still ambiguous. What does it mean? What does unconditional surrender mean? Spectator says, our war against Iran is now in its third week. President Trump has said, we took a little excursion to the Middle East to get rid of some evil. And I think you'll see it's going to be a short-term excursion. Later last week, he said, we've won. Let me tell you, we've won. So is it an excursion? Is it a war? We went through this last week. Have we won? Is it over? Or is it just beginning? These are the kinds of things that we've heard. It says neither of those statements is true, which is not to say we won't or can't win. Unfortunately, the president still hasn't said what it means or what he means by winning or what we want to achieve in Iran. And you see more and more Americans that are openly saying we're against this, we don't support it, etc. Notice this from the Spectator. It says, if we are to truly end the regime, there will be a need to deploy many more troops there, perhaps thousands. Mr. Trump wanted to end our endless wars, but his action in Iran may take many months, even years, to do so. This is the reality. As much as you want it to be over in 5 days, or early on, I guess they said 5 weeks, then that was dialed back. Now here we are into the third week. And America's looking for a way out. And MAGA's divided. And American Spectator's pointing out the obvious. To actually get regime change, to actually get a government in Iran that is pro-American, well, that's a little bit more involved. So winning doesn't mean regime change now. It says, without clear aims, Mr. Trump is losing the support of the American people. It may be too late for him to make the Oval Office speech that I've written about to explain to Americans just what our goals in Iran are. But he could nevertheless try. It says he must if this war is going to go on much longer, which it will. That's the American Spectator's view. So here is America now over the weekend demanding, you saw it there in the cold open, that other nations send help to Hormuz. We don't need it. You know, we don't need the oil that's flowing through there, but Europe does. Other nations do. He's called upon the British Navy to to help. And now we're learning more about the British Navy and just how weak and pathetic it is. The once great Royal Navy. And how little support Britain or others are providing here. And they're torn. Do they want cheap oil? Or do they want to see America really take a hit in this war effort? It's a tough call. It's a tough call in their minds. Listen to this clip from Nordic leaders on the Middle East conflict, clip 4.
I think we are not part of this war. We did not initiate it, but we are all affected by it. So I think there's a clear call here that international law must be respected, and it should be the responsibility of the concerned parties to find ways of ending the hostilities that now have great impact around the world. We are concerned to see that there is still an escalation. There are still worries about how the world economy will be affected by the energy situation around the Gulf. For our part, you know, we will use any channel we have, any opportunity we have to urge the parties to find a way that will not escalate this war. I think that's what we can say. It is not our war.
There you go. International law. There's that term again. The laws that only apply to America and little Israel. How easy it is for these European leaders to stand up there and say, it's not our war. Listen, Trump's the one that got into this. It's his fault. It's interesting when you just lay it alongside Ukraine and how billions, and of course America had to lead that effort. Tens of billions going to Ukraine to continue the war against Putin. Oh, that's right. Putin's a threat. We're afraid of Putin. It's a righteous cause. Keep the war going. And it has been for years. This time, Iran just murdered 36,000 of their own citizens in January. Think about that for a moment. You would think if any... And the thing of it is, Trump can't even get a majority of support here in America. But you would think, just for a second, stepping back, and given the history of this regime that actually has blood on its hands, Americans' blood, for five decades. And not Americans only, Jews, Europeans, the number one state sponsor of terror, of terrorism worldwide. I mean, just looking at it rationally, you would think if there's any war effort that would draw the support of the whole world, it would be this one. But oh no! President Trump demands that Asia and Europe help secure the Strait of Hormuz. And the Bible outlines these areas as America's enemies. It shows you how impossible this situation is to fix. This morning in class, we were, I think it's in Luke 19, where Jesus, his final ascent into Jerusalem for the last week of his life, he comes in on a colt, just as is prophesied in Zechariah 9 and verse 9. And his disciples, I mean, they were taking their garments off and putting, as best they could, a red carpet before him as he made his triumphant entrance. For him it was. He was to be crucified. I mean, this is our warrior king. What a victory for mankind, for human civilization, for peace and prosperity. Of course, you've got to take the long view. You've got to look at God's purpose and plan. God's purpose stands. I mean, he's never late. God is never late. Jesus showed up at Lazarus's house, and Lazarus had been dead for 4 days. And everyone there was like, you're late. If you would have gotten here 4 days earlier, then he could still be alive, our brother. And Christ said, I'm not late. talked about the resurrection. Martha said, well, I understand that Lazarus will come up later in the resurrection, but, you know, what about now? And Christ said, I am the resurrection. Jesus Christ is the Prince of Peace. He's the peacemaker. And this world does not know how to make peace. And so you look at this world, you look at Hormuz, you look at America's interactions and demanding Europe and Asia, and then the response, the lukewarm response, you can't get any support. America can't get any support. Now, when Europe was getting America to take care of all the support for Ukraine, I mean, then they had so many wonderful things to say about America and Joe Biden and the dear leader. Not so much with Orange Hitler. The whole world is definitely not supporting America. Not now. It's using Trump. It's using America as a convenient excuse. Not our war. Well, it's not our war. As if this number one state sponsor of terrorism is no problem. Just leave it be. And then to bring up international law, I mean, that's almost too sickening to even consider. Notice they don't bring up international law with respect to the mullahs. It's just America. It's America that's violating all these laws. Now, the mullahs, they can blow up discos. They can blow up restaurants. They can target Americans, Jews. They can give safe harbor to 9/11 terrorists even. The mullahs, they get a free pass. Hamas, free pass. Hezbollah, free pass. October 7, doesn't matter. They were singing death, death to the IDF. You remember the Glastonbury Festival last year, I think it was, last summer? The same music group over this weekend. They're out taking to the streets to support Iran in Britain. The once mighty Britain has sure fallen. And here's America. I mean, even with the way that Donald Trump is approaching this, as strong as he's been in certain areas, as much courage as he's shown, what we're still seeing is an Isaiah 3 mentality, because God's taken away true leadership. I had it for later in my notes. Let me just see if I can find it. From 1943, again, a lesson from history. A lesson from history. I think it was the meeting at Casablanca. Churchill was there, and they had some very clear war aims, and they understood what it meant. Churchill certainly did. He understood what it meant for the enemies to unconditionally surrender. We seem to have forgotten this history and these terms, these definitions. This is the declaration that Churchill and Franklin Roosevelt laid down in 1943. The president and the prime minister, after a complete survey of the world war situation, are more than ever determined that peace can come to the world only by a total elimination of German and Japanese war power. It has to be totally eliminated. Their war power has to be destroyed. This involves the simple formula of placing the objective of this war in terms of an unconditional surrender by Germany, Italy, and Japan. Now, just to give you some idea of what it took for that to happen. I mean, even in the case of Japan, it took two atomic bombs. And then the emperor coming in and telling the military, basically, look, we've got to surrender. The Japanese military guys wanted to keep fighting. That's just 80 years ago. Just think of the hatred and the spirit of murder and how some would just as soon give up their own cities to keep on murdering, killing, maiming, destroying, fighting. Human nature is sick, and it needs healing. And Jesus Christ is the healer. Jesus Christ is the peacemaker. I mean, at least in the case of 1943, you had leadership in Britain, in America, that clearly saw that in order to get rid of this menace, this wave of destruction, you have to totally destroy their war power. It says here, unconditional surrender by them means a reasonable assurance of world peace for generations. Unconditional surrender means not the destruction of the German populace, nor of the Italian or Japanese populace, but does mean the destruction of a philosophy in Germany, Italy, and Japan, which is based on the conquest and subjugation of other peoples. We're at war with a mentality, a mindset, a philosophy, said Churchill and Roosevelt. So if the guy coming in, you know, and maybe he's maimed, maybe he's in the hospital bed right now. Everybody's got different reports. But just going back to what we said last week, if he's more of a hardliner than the father, well, what does that mean? If you end the war effort, declare victory, and Iran's controlling this passageway at Hormuz and bombing oil tankers that go in there or setting them ablaze, what kind of victory is that? What have you done to obliterate this mentality? They knew, you see, that to have peace for a few generations at least, you had to change the thinking, the mindset, the philosophy of hatred, of murder. So, you know, when an Israelite leader, in this case, President Trump in America, comes forward and sends out these tweets with all these terms, you know, you better look into some of the history, even recent history. Make sure you understand the terminology. Make sure all of America understands the objective here. Make sure the world understands. But as it is, you see a lot of, well, you just saw them, leaders that are out there saying, well, now international law and America started this, and you know, we're not going to help them out, and they're on their own, and well, yeah, we do need help in Hormuz. Just the fact that America doesn't have the strength to go into Hormuz and say, hey, we're in control, we've got the resources, we are going to stop this from being any kind of a threat. And of course, nations in Europe and Asia would love America. At least on the surface, they would say, oh, America's great. And we get cheap oil again. And when America's funding everything, whether it's Ukraine or NATO, I mean, they can sure pat you on the back, tell you how much they love them. But see, the camouflage is gone now. And now, you know, okay, costs are increasing. But boy, Donald Trump's getting into a quagmire. This could be good in the long run. This could be good for Europe. This could be bad for America. Martin Gilbert said about this conference in 1943 in Casablanca, it says, bad winter weather forced him to postpone his departure until the following day. During the delay, he prepared a note about government plans for the post-war world, unemployment and low wages to be abolished, education to be greatly improved and prolonged, great developments to be undertaken in housing and health, but at the same time, no increase in the cost of living, etc. It says, it was because he did not want to deceive people by false hopes and airy visions of utopia and El Dorado, Churchill explained, that I have refrained so far from making promises about the future. We must all do our best, and we shall do it much better if we are not hampered by a cloud of pledges and promises which arise out of the hopeful and genial side of man's nature and are not brought into relation with the hard facts of life. Churchill was a realist. He didn't dwell in fantasy. Other leaders, I assume it was talking about Roosevelt or whoever, that were out there giving, you know, all these promises. Oh, it's going to be perfect. Actually, this is the hard, cold reality of war. This is what we're fighting against. This is their mindset. This is their philosophy. This is their war aim. You better be pretty clear-eyed when you're laying out your own plans and explaining it to your nation and really the rest of the world as well. Listen to Fox News on, again, the European response or NATO's response to President Trump's demands. This is, you can play clip 5 and 11 together.
The Financial Times is also reporting that Italy and France have contacted Iran to try and arrange passage for their ships while President Trump is trying to create this coalition against Iran.
Remember that this war, even in the United States, is a very unpopular one. So any foreign leader or leader from a third country who decides to get involved and potentially risk the lives of their own citizens, that could be electoral suicide for them if they were to do so. So Donald Trump obviously feels that he can absorb military losses back home, though that possibly might be tested in the months to come as well. But that's not a luxury that other leaders have.
The world, in many ways, wants to see America hurt or embarrassed more than it wants the, you know, the cheap energy sources. Everybody, the spirit of get, it's everywhere. And, of course, on this show, we step back and try to give you the most important prophetic developments that are unfolding. The Telegraph says here, the Iran war has divided Europe and shattered the Atlantic alliance. As if we needed more shattering of this alliance. Is this significant? Yet another excuse to drive a wedge between America and Europe. Europe, by the way, that just 80-some years ago had this mindset that had to be obliterated. It had to be crushed. Otherwise, it would just reemerge. I mean, early on with this war in Iran, you heard President Trump say, you know, we don't want to keep coming back every 5-10 years, as Gadi Taub said, you know, mow the lawn every few years, because the terrorists, they keep growing, they keep rising up. It's easy, isn't it, to say we're going to crush this mindset, this even the World War II. I mean, look at how long it lasted. You had America as the number one superpower for decades, and it did. I mean, in that sense, there was a relatively smooth handoff from a declining British Empire over to Manasseh, you know, the United States of America. But now look, I mean, look at, there's, the Royal Navy is just a shell of what it once was. And you've got America that still has some strength, but like Leviticus 26 says, it's being spent in vain. We can't control the Strait of Hormuz. We're demanding Asia and Europe take over. That's another storyline, inviting Germany, a German-led Europe, into the Middle East to take care, to finish what America obviously is not willing to finish. Among the most important indirect consequences of the war is the deepening rift between Europe and the U.S., the Atlantic Alliance, on which the global Pax Americana has relied since 1945, has been exposed as a hollowed-out shell. Neither Europeans nor Americans see any obligation either to support the other or to take account of the other's interests. You just heard the Nordic leaders there saying, it's not our war. Donald Trump needs to be respectful of international law. Telegraph says here, the sharp rise in oil and gas prices will be a huge boost to the Russian war machine. All the more so the longer the war continues. I mean, they're lifting some of the sanctions on Russian oil. I mean, you talk about, it's easy to say, yeah, getting into these Mideast wars, these never-ending wars, it's a quagmire. But just look at the whole of the world. What a quagmire. Okay, there's Iran now, Hormuz, rising gas prices. Let's lift sanctions on Russia. And how in the world can Russia benefit from this war? Well, if sanctions are lifted, Russia can start selling oil at cheaper prices. And then this helps Russia's effort in Ukraine. That, my friends, is a worldwide quagmire. God's trying to get our attention, isn't he? The world, I mean, we really and truly are living in dangerous times. 2 Timothy 3:1. Great tribulation. What happens when tribulation sets in and people are suffering? Entire cities are going up in flames. And Jesus, in his final ascent to Jerusalem, he's coming in on a colt, a mule. And he weeps over Jerusalem. He weeps when he sees the city. Because he knows. He knew. He knew what was coming. And when did that destruction set in? Oh, it was like 30 or 40 years later. I mean, that's godly emotion. Looking at human beings and what was going to come upon the city of Jerusalem. And God, again, looking at it all from above, saying, you're bringing this on yourselves. You're doing this to yourself. You're committing suicide. And God weeps. And God sighs and cries. And that's a proper show of emotion. Jesus also wept over the friends and family of Lazarus because they didn't have faith. They didn't believe. They didn't look to God and his power. They didn't look to God for intervention. Man's just been going it alone. And so we've had, you know, Jerusalem in 70 AD play out over and over again. And God weeps because we won't turn to him in faith. We won't believe. We'll talk about religion just as they did in Christ's day. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, though? And you don't do what I say. Why won't you keep the commandments? Why won't you do what I'm preaching? I mean, Jesus said this over and over again. It says, in order to offset potential shortages caused by the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, Trump has now lifted sanctions on Russia. You can't make this up. How are we going to make a world like this work in the end? How are we going to bring peace between Russia, Ukraine, Iran, you know, Hamas, Jews, America, America and Europe? How is this going to be sorted out? I saw an article today about the problem that MAGA has with podcasters. You know, Tucker, Megan, Joe Rogan now. The split in MAGA. It wasn't that long ago, the inauguration. What was that, 14 months? And President Trump proudly said, I mean, America, we won in a landslide. We got all the swing states, all the bellwether counties, whatever. He said, we've never been this united. We've never been. right on the threshold of a golden age. Bible sales, they're booming. People are praying now. People are praying openly, publicly, praying over the president. We've got a national prayer call coming up in May. I think it's the month of May, just a couple months away. And a world that's in trouble, a lot of trouble, a lot of problems. Here's the Telegraph trying to talk about how the Iran war, you know, it's dividing America and Europe. No, that's already happened. And, you know, people put a mask on it. They put a camouflage over it for the longest of time. But as you've heard on this show, as you've read in The Trumpet or at The Trumpet or in our magazine, Europe's preparing, a German-led Europe is preparing for round three. Yes, there's been a little bit of a respite between World War II and World War III. But that enemy of America and Britain, by the way, it is rising, and it's rising fast. And here we come to another story, another event, where even in Europe, even in Britain, this is the Telegraph. This is a conservative outlet. And it's saying, yeah, I mean, Trump's effort here, it's dividing America from Europe. Yet another convenient excuse. The hatred has been there. The spirit of murder, the spirit of hatred, it's been there. It's been there for decades. It's just now, I mean, it's just now out in the open. As I said, I mean, if anything, the Iran war effort should be drawing America and Europe closer than ever before. But here's the Telegraph saying, no, it's just the opposite. I mean, it just shows how irrational the hatred, the contempt, the division really and truly is. Are they taking to the streets in Britain saying, come on, U.S. and Israel, come on, Jews. You know, October 7 was just 2.5 years ago. And Iran's the one that sponsors Hamas and Hezbollah. So this is great. No, they're taking to the streets to show support for Iran, for Palestinian statehood, for Hamas, for October 7. They're singing death, death to the IDF. And every Jew in Israel, it's mandatory. They all serve in the IDF. So here's a singer. I guess he's somewhat popular. I don't know anything about the music side of it. But at Glastonbury last summer and then this weekend. Yeah, he can do it. You know, the Twitter police that have put certain Brits in jail for saying anything offensive toward a Muslim or any minority? Yeah, I guess they're on vacation this past weekend. Because you can get out there and openly sing death to Jews, and that's not a problem, I guess. I guess it's not even a problem. The Telegraph says here, not only did Trump make no attempt to prepare European public opinion for his onslaught, this is the Telegraph. I mean, I wonder what they're saying at The Guardian. His attitude to the EU throughout his second term has been consistently hostile. Right. Trump's the hostile one. Trump, maybe Putin to some degree, although even there, they're not fearful of Putin. Germany certainly isn't. They're negotiating secret deals with Putin. And they're quite happy to put Putin forward as the boogeyman. As long as America funds all of this war effort in Ukraine, I mean, the war can go on for years and years. We could put tens of billions. Hey, if energy prices increase because of that, well, it's necessary. We've got to make sacrifices. But now you look at the onslaught, the Trump onslaught in Iran, the number one state sponsor for terrorism for a half century. The president's even threatened to annex or compulsorily purchase Greenland, the sovereign territory of Denmark, says the Telegraph. Well, look what he's doing. It's been consistently hostile. I think the one consistent hostility has been Trump derangement syndrome. Yeah? Of course. You know exactly where they're going to come down on every single, if Trump's involved, then you know the way they're going to view the development. You know the way they'll report the story. It says, what does move the most immovable European electorates, however, is immigration. A hitherto unmentionable peril could easily emerge if the Iran war topples the clerical regime. Yeah, because illegal immigration into Europe, it hasn't even been a problem. But now it could be. Why? Orange Hitler. Hitler in America. If Iranian refugees pour into Europe, well, then we've got a problem. And who caused it? Here there's all these Muslim immigrants just pouring into Europe, into Britain, taking over Birmingham, pretty much. You can't send out an offensive tweet. They had the guy, it was one of the award show last night. He was talking about, you know, how there were no British actors in some category, and that the Brits' response was that, well, at least we punish our pedophiles, referring to the Epstein people. And America hasn't been doing that, which is true. And here Britain, though, has covered up decades of pedophilia and rape gangs. Because, well, the perpetrators were Pakistani. And we don't want to dwell on that story. The world we're living in case you aren't getting the message between the lines, the world we're living in is sick. There's a sickness from head to toe. And we're in need of a healing, an intervention, a miracle from God. And God is a miracle-making father. And he's going to have to intervene, as Matthew 24 says, to save us from ourselves. Several European countries, just to come back to this Telegraph piece, notably Germany, Britain, France, and Sweden, are already home to a million-strong Iranian diaspora, many of whom are highly educated, etc. But this might quickly change if large numbers began to arrive from a potentially chaotic Iran. So this could happen. I mean, this could be part of the push in Daniel 11:40. I don't want to make light of it. The impact of war, it does affect a lot of nations. Look at what Hormuz is doing to oil prices, to that channel, to the flow of oil through that little strait. This definitely could impact how Daniel 11:40 plays out. But what the tone of it, as you see, is Donald Trump is the cause. He's the cause. What a convenient cover for the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Emperor. Coming on the scene on a white horse, saying, hey, we're going to restore order to the world. We're going to bring peace to this world. We're finally going to solve some of these problems caused by, well, Donald Trump especially, maybe Putin to some degree, but the world needs an empire in Europe. The world needs a Holy Roman Empire. The Telegraph says here, one problem for any European leader who supports the war is that Trump is widely and deeply unpopular. It says here, being associated with Trump is toxic, as Mertz found out last Sunday when his party lost a state election in Baden-Württemberg. It says, by the same token, being denounced by Trump provides a surefire boost in popularity. It's amazing. It's amazing that President Trump's advisors, that they don't see this blatant hostility and hatred, that they still can look and say, hey, Asia, Europe, you're our allies. And we need you to step up and get control of Hormuz. Just inviting the German-led Holy Roman Empire into the Middle East. I mean, we're all but handing it over already. The spirit, anyway, behind it. Both Europe and America are, of course, divided on the war, just as they are on Ukraine. Opinion polls suggest that whereas a majority of Americans still back Ukraine and disapprove of Trump's rapprochement with Putin, or rapprochement, is that how you say it? Only a minority support his attack on Iran. So who knows what one person's opinion is next to the guy sitting next to him. It's all over the place. It would be, I mean, this would be a good time for clarity when it comes to what does winning mean? What does unconditional surrender mean? In fact, we're just seeing a lot of Isaiah 3. We're seeing a lot of weakness. We're seeing a lot of divisiveness, a lot of fighting. And it's also exposed so much weakness, and not just in America, but in Britain as well. The Telegraph, this is another article, actually the same article. The question hovering over this war, however, has been, where is the Royal Navy? Britain's been exposed in this. It came as an unpleasant shock to the British public that there were no British warships on patrol in the Mediterranean, the Gulf, or the Indian Ocean. The only vessel that was available turned out to be the destroyer HMS Dragon, but she only sailed from Portsmouth this week. By the time she arrives in Cyprus, the Iran war may be over. How did this come about? How did this happen? You know, people in Britain are looking at this saying, what? That's it? That's the extent of it? It has been humiliating to discover that other navies maintain a higher state of readiness, something we once took for granted. It says, within living memory, Britannia has gone from ruling the waves to being submerged in shame. You know, you made a big deal, or Trump's people made a big deal about sinking the Iranian Navy last week, week before last. And here is the Royal Navy, which once ruled the waves. It was sunk long ago. They sunk themselves. Is this good for what Churchill and Roosevelt decided in Casablanca in 1943? Listen, we're going to have to destroy this spirit, this mindset, this philosophy. And then it's going to take, you know, some strength on our part to maintain order, to maintain peace, to maintain some sense of security. This Telegraph piece, by the way, goes on and just discusses some of the glorious moments of the Royal Navy's history. It says, now when destiny calls, we can barely even dispatch a flotilla, let alone a fleet. On paper, the Royal Navy today has some 63 vessels, but these include just 15 significant surface ships, aircraft carriers, destroyers, and frigates, plus 10 nuclear submarines, of which only a handful are seaworthy. Just, I mean, you could go to, I lived there 6 years. And you visit Victory or whatever it is, whatever museum, and so many of these ports, these glorious seafaring vessels as part of Britain's history. And that's what the modern Navy vessels are like. They're not seaworthy, I guess. So many of them. Not accidentally, this decline in British naval power coincides with a loss of prestige and even of respect, especially across the Atlantic. The contemptuous language used in public about British forces, or indeed leaders, by Trump would have been inconceivable for any previous president. Well, for President Trump's party, asks for support and help. Britain doesn't provide it. And in some ways, it's because they don't have the help. They don't have enough to support America's effort. And then you get the different political ideologies and so on. And here again, it makes for a worldwide, as I said, a worldwide quagmire. Telegraph says here, our stuff, I just don't think it's ready, said one naval source. It's certainly not ready to operate in a high-threat environment. Once the envy of the world, the Royal Navy now finds itself with a limited number of options to respond to the global crisis. President Trump asks for help, and Britain is quick to send 8 sailors. You can't make this up. You cannot make it up. 8 sailors. The U.S. president used his own social media platform to urge Britain to join a global flotilla to force the reopening of Hormuz, the critical global oil passage point. It says here, well, it quotes Trump, hopefully, the U.K. and others affected by this artificial constraint will send ships. The British response may disappoint the U.S. commander-in-chief. The Telegraph has learned that Britain only has a team of 8 sailors in the Middle East capable of countering a threat of Iranian mines. It's not funny, is it? It's laughable, and yet it's deadly serious. What has happened to the once mighty Royal Navy? Listen to this from Sky News Australia. This is clip 12.
What we saw yesterday at the Al Quds Day protest, which was very much about recognizing the Ayatollah in all his greatness. Many that I spoke to compared the Ayatollah to the Pope and were crying that he was dead on a London street, which is just baffling to me. This was very much about sort of touting Islamic extremism. There was death to the IDF chants. There was kill the Jews. I got sworn at on multiple occasions, almost physically assaulted. This was a very aggressive march, something that I haven't witnessed so horribly before. You know, usually with pro-Palestine marches, it's a little bit more dour. This was the really ugly side of the movement. And I think that the war in Iran has just perpetuated that and brought people out of their homes, the likes of which we haven't really seen before. It was extremism.
That's 13. That's about the protests that took to the streets in support of Iran and Hamas and these groups, these terrorist groups. But this is what she said about British support for America, Starmer in particular. Play the clip right before that.
Now, at the top of the show, I played you Donald Trump saying other countries like Britain should help the US protect oil tankers that Iran is attacking in the Persian Gulf to get the oil moving again and stop an economic crisis. Well, no surprise, but the first reaction of Britain's Prime Minister is to say no. So why is Keir Starmer so reluctant to help the US? Is it because it's too dangerous a job, or is it because it's so scared of Britain's big Muslim minority?
I just cannot believe that England has let this level of extremism into the country. And you're right, it's dictating foreign policy massively. I mean, you've got Keir Starmer, our lowly prime minister, sort of more focused on managing party politics than projecting strength abroad. You know, Britain needs clarity and conviction on security at this time, not this careful triangulation that he continues to push. And I think we're really struggling as a public over here at the moment. The situation is dire. It really seems like the country is on a knife's edge right now because we don't have someone who is uniting the people in the number 10 office right now. It's very, very scary, the path that this country's going down, because as you very early on said, Andrew, and you were quite right, as per usual, he's playing party politics. And he's actually putting national security at risk in order to secure the Muslim vote that he so desperately needs.
It's a scary path that Britain is on, as she says there. And America, in many ways, is not far behind. It talks about needing clarity and conviction in times such as these. Clarity and conviction on security. You don't see it in Britain. And even in the way the Trump administration is approaching the war, handling the war with Iran, demanding, you know, the world's support and wanting a quick exit, even that is exposing just how unclear our vision, our convictions really and truly are. I took you 2 minutes over, but won't charge you for that extra 120 seconds, free material, to get this week started off right. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.